good stuff. I was just listening to a podcast with Brian Damaris and Mark Follow.
Oh, really?
Before this, I guess somewhat of a prep.
Good prep.
Oh yeah.
I was gonna pull up his wiki real quick.
I've already got a.
I mean, he does Mavs, right?
Golly, there's way.
I followed him on Instagram today, and he hasn't posted anything new in a year. So,
man, if you put in, I think he would be actually shocked if he like Googled his name. But
he really is that down to earth, isn't he?
I hope so. What if he comes in here? What's,
oh, dude,
what's up, homos? What are y'all doing?
It's gonna suck or what? Yeah, Mark, it's gonna suck.
Yeah. But no, I was looking up Mark Followell, five fast facts you need to know.
Okay.
On the heavy,
it's even more spare than Wikipedia.
On the heavy.com. So. Fast fact number one is loading.
Maybe we can run these by him and he can give us a true or false.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely something that can be done. But he was, I learned a little bit. I forgot that he got married. Well, I guess.
So somewhere. I forgot he did soccer.
Yeah, he did FC Dallas in 2012. He started doing FC Dallas, and then he just recently did the World Cup. The World Cup was that was a big get.
Which he was great in. And it says here, too, he's done some Bundesliga. So I wonder if he's getting the call.
For the Bundesliga?
I
don't know. That's a good.
I have to ask him.
Sure. Welcome to the Mark Followell pre-game show. So.
Oh, we're on the air?
Well, I'm recording.
I
think it records anyway. Mark Followell's in the air. Here we go.
You got a big name guest hotline.
What's up?
Well.
So this is not going to work. Hold on.
Wow, we can't see Mark at all.
That's it. He already quit on us.
There we go.
Okay. Oh no,
three
he just
seconds
had to move.
In.
He just had
it's
to
not
move.
Gonna work.
Move. That's all because of the light from the front window.
Oh, he looks pretty good for being in a quarantine. How's it going, Mark?
Yeah, good. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Thought good. You weren't even going to give us a chance to fail. 3 seconds in. Nope. Not going to work.
All right. Well, Mark, I was going to do like an I tried to recently I did an interview, not recently, but one of the first interviews I did was with Grego, and I tried to do an intro for him and it went horribly. So I don't really think I'm going to do that with you, Mark.
This one's going much better.
You think? I think it's going pretty bad. It's going really, really bad.
Are you recording? You're probably not recording yet, though, right?
I'm sort of recording. I'm going to cut that out right there. But
oh, okay.
I mean, we're
it
not.
It usually shows up. It usually says so and so is recording on these.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah. Mark. Or, sorry, Brad. You want to make sure we.
Well, I'm like double recording. So.
Okay.
This is Mark Follow.
Oh, wow. So you have the 40 minute version of Zoom. Is that what I'm seeing?
Yeah. So okay. We'll be cut off pretty. No. What? No, I think they gave me a little bit further, but hard at it. 6:50.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds good, man. I'm ready when you guys are.
Sweet. Hey. So, Mark. I'm really nervous for this.
That's why I'm drunk. It's great to talk to you, Mark. We really appreciate you doing this.
Do you go by prefer Jacob or JD?
You know what? Either one works. I've been going by both. So my family on my mom's side calls me JD. So Mark, if you would like to be part of my family.
No one has ever called you that.
Yeah, it's not true. Actually.
No one has never called. Side. Okay, whatever.
So, but we can go with Jacob. Jeez. Just keep it simple for the listener.
Okay, that sounds good.
Start it off, Jacob. Since you booked this big name guest, Mark Followell.
Yeah, which a little background on that, Mark. I was listening to the Hardline. I can't even remember exactly when I tweeted you because I think I was already drinking on the weekend, mm-hmm. and they just happened to mention Mark doesn't have much going on. He might talk to anybody. Right? I was like, all right, let's test that out.
We so don't know if you don't ask, right?
Yeah, well, you know, we really appreciate it. And in fact, you've been answering our dumb basketball questions going all the way back to like 2010.
Way back. Probably, don't remember probably way further back.
Yeah, like Twitter day one stuff.
Oh, yeah. That would be in 2009 in my case. Probably would be my first. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was – what about you, Brad?
That was probably because – 2010, I was not into the Mavs at all. Not in the least. And I'd heard you on the ticket. I go, you know what? I want to, and I was trying to get into it, and I would be on Twitter like, so do I really want to, and you really got me into it.
Yeah,
I was in those. That's awesome, man.
You really
that's
thrusted awesome. Me into it. I'm not trying to just because you're on the podcast, but it was legitimately you on Twitter and us kind of talking while you're broadcasting and you're on Twitter or during breaks.
You would, I got you into talk it at the right time since they won in 2011. So
I think for me, Mark, it was the Nuggets Mavs series. I don't remember if that was 2000. I guess it had to have been 2009, right?
Yeah, that was the second round in 2009.
So I remember blowing you up then, and you were really helpful and just. Like I said, all of our dumb basketball questions. So
that was a tough series. A couple of good moments in it, but that was a tough series.
Tough series. Yes, so tough that I've completely blocked it out of my memory. I don't even remember that.
The Mavs lost 4-1. And then there was the controversy at the end of game three when they were up three and tried to intentionally foul Carmelo Anthony. And, of course, the referee didn't call it when you wanted him to call it. And I think it was, no, they were up two and they had a foul to give and they were trying to foul Carmelo and the referee didn't call it. And then he hit a three and won the game basically at the end of regulation, like the buzzer beater.
Interesting.
And then the,
I don't know. I remember it a little bit differently, Mark. You might want to recheck your body.
I would probably go with Mark.
the Crystal Taylor stuff with Dirk came out and then
he had an
incredible game four with all the distraction of that going on. He had something like a 44-point, 14 rebound game four to keep him alive. And then they went up to Denver and lost game five. So that was kind of a pretty memorable series. And that whole mellow era of the Nuggets, that was by far their best year where they went to the conference finals but lost to the Lakers.
Well, and go ahead, Jake.
Sorry, just so everyone knows, we did not tell Mark ahead of time we were going to bring this series up. That's all.
We didn't give him notes that say, hey, you remember? Because, no, wow. No, I was literally just saying, I was just now listening to a podcast with Mark. Jacob, I'm not saying I don't know anything about you, Mark. I've known you for years, but maybe I didn't. I needed like a refresher course. So I just did, I just listened to a podcast with you and Ryan Demiris. Y'all were talking about the 2011 championship and all the background stuff on that. And
thank you for listening to that. That was a long one, man. That was our longest podcast.
Yeah, I actually still have like 20 minutes left, which I'm going to listen to after I get done with this. But the whole part where you and Brian DeMarit, I think obviously both of y'all had really just distinct memories about all this. And I'm sitting there going, God, Portland, barely remember. They did go Oklahoma City. And then I totally forgot every bit of it. And it was a great refresher that y'all had because, you know, I'm not saying I have a bad memory, but because recently we were watching like the classic baseball games that have been on the past over on the majors. And I'm telling you, early 90s, I had knew every bit of that. Every bit of it. And now I think alcohol and drugs have maybe contributed or something like, I don't know. Just
maybe kids.
kids
job.
Don't remember any of that.
You know, I'm glad. I appreciate the fact that you listen to the show and to the podcast. The stuff, I mean, I have, you know, obviously a weird memory and it's kind of a curse and a blessing. And there's things I remember from old baseball games as well. But when it comes to anything Maverick basketball related, I mean, I remember stuff from the 80s and 90s, obviously. But since I've been with the team, I mean, that's the stuff that I remember pretty intensely. And, you know, although tomorrow on 3-7, I'm going to be on with Sturm and we're going to talk about the game against Utah that Dallas won in 2001, game five. Playoff series. And I've watched that game and there are like six or seven, like really important things that happened that I had no recollection of. So, so even in my case, some of the things like fade from the memory over time, but when it comes to 2011, I think, you know, besides the games, there are just so many things I remember about what was going on in my own head and the experiences and the stories and just, you know, I think, Brad, have you heard it? I mean, just how pissed off I was whenever we flew home from Portland after that Brandon Roy game. And like, you know, at that time, I think I told the story on there, like my wife and I were dating at the time and she was like, I've got a group of friends and we're going to be at this bar and you're going to get in at 10. Why don't you come out and meet us? And it's like, I don't want to come out and meet you guys because you're going to have friends there and people I don't know. And they're going to start asking me, what's wrong with the Mavericks? What's wrong with the Mavericks?
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I don't want to
Talk like three, they're three shots and a beer in. And
well,
yeah, man.
Got their arm around you.
what he was talking about was true, because that was the fit. As Mavs fans, we were always ready for the worst to happen. We were never going in there going, we're going to win this. You know, we obviously, whenever I started that year in 2011, that was actually my first year I had actually watched, and this is going to blow me up a little bit, but I actually watched from game one to the entire season all the way through. I'm not a huge Mavs fan. I really am not. That's cool. And that was the season that I picked. I go, I've got a fill-in on this one. And that's the one I watched all the way through.
Brad, it's funny you say that too, because after 2010, I think we had lost to, I think the Spurs, and that series.
In the first round.
That's the one that crushed me. I just said, I can't do it. I need a break. Yeah. And then I remember.
We were the two seed and they were the seven seed.
Just crushed me. And I remember later on that fall, my dad is like, you need to watch the Mavs. I said, I just can't do it anymore. I'm crushed. He said, no, they got Tyson now.
Oh yeah.
And this was like October, November. So he was telling me they got Tyson. This is different.
But that was like the point. I hate to sound like that was the,
it's like, that would be a good title for a book this year.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. It's not to say the Stern book, but it was literally,
I swear to God, he said that,
but it was people, I would go to people's houses and I knew the Mavs game was on. I'm like, is anybody going to turn the Mavs game on? He's like, what? We don't really watch them. I'm like, you need to watch the Mavs this year. I'm telling you right now, they are really good. And no one, okay, well, but
it was a great year. And like I said, I'm glad you're enjoying that podcast, Brad, because Brian and I do have some vivid memories of the bad times, the ups, the downs, the good times, obviously everything that happens. Have you gotten to the stories about post-championship yet?
Well, I just got to the point where y'all were in the bar and I forgot Brian Damaris was the one who, he got the keys to go get the trophy out of the trunk. Brian Damaris
at the loon.
That's crazy. So yeah,
that's a good time, for sure.
I'm really enjoying it. I didn't, I'm not a huge basketball fan. I know this is gonna suck for like all your fans, because like if they wanted to listen to this, but I'm a real big Mark Falwell fan. I enjoy what he does. I think he's probably one of the best announcers out there. Compared to, why did I say Trump? But Sturm, you're the more wealth of knowledge in sports. Like you can just kind of call it out. And I don't know. Yeah, that's why I wanted to have you. Jacob wanted to have you on too. So
I do have, like I said, I have a weird memory when it comes to sports, and it's a curse and it's a blessing, and it's probably from. A lot of time growing up, all my brothers and sisters are much older than I am, so they were all kind of out of the house. So I consider myself kind of an only child, because, you know, from 6 years old on, when you're growing up as the only child in the household, and we spent a lot of my childhood kind of growing out in the country. So, friends aren't exactly close by. And so you learn to amuse yourself and study things and get involved in things. And for me, sports nerddom was kind of where it was. So I have this goofy memory about that.
So funny thing is, you grew up in Justin?
Yeah, we lived in Louisville for a while. But then the formative years were spent there in Louisville, a couple of years in New Mexico. But then when I was 14 years old, barely 14, eighth grade, we moved and lived in Justin. And my mom actually still lives out there at 86 years old. She still lives in the house that we moved into in 1984 or 85, whatever year it was.
I was actually kind of shocked. I thought you were more Dallas proper, but Justin would be probably a pretty small town back in the 80s and 90s. '80s and 90s.
I was born at Baylor Hospital in Dallas. So Dallas proper from that regard.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, a lot of time spent growing up in Louisville, which when we moved there in the early 70s, that was supposedly, according to my parents, was like barely a one-stop light town. And, you know, now it's, 80, 90, 100,000 people, however many people live in Louisville.
I lived there probably around those times in 2010, and I was ready to get out of there. I was like, I actually liked small town, so.
And Justin was, I think that the city limit sign in 1990, which would have been right after I graduated high school, the city limit sign changed to where it was population 1,234. So it was Justin city limit pop 1, 2, 3, 4, but it was even, it was even smaller than that, obviously, when I was there. And so if you went to North, if you were in the Northwest School District, you know, for those who don't know, and obviously it's changed a lot now,
quite a
but
bit.
At the time that, and it still is, it's just, there's a whole lot more schools, but that was a vast area of small towns that went to one central high school. And so Justin, Rome, Roanoke, Newark, Trophy Club, Hazlitt, all those towns went to Justin Northwest High School. So when I was there, I mean, now that that district has three high schools, I think. When I was there, it was a 3A high school when I first started, and it was a small 4A when for three of my 4 years there. And so like when you, if you went to Justin Northwest in the mid 80s, and this is what people said about it. It's like the, that's where the goat ropers and shit kickers go, is Northwest High School. That's what they called us back in the mid 80s. If you weren't an FFA, man, you were,
yeah,
you know,
that's where you get all the chicks, right?
You didn't have many friends if you weren't an FFA, man. Yeah.
Did you,
which for those, not, for those watching who don't know, Future Farmers of America.
I know, but did you raise a pig or anything?
That's right.
No. I
didn't. What about sports?
I'm really surprised given my parents' background and everything like that. But no, I did not do that.
Any sports?
Baseball and football stuff in junior high. But by the time I got to high school, I was out of it. So
okay.
From a sports standpoint.
So
I mean,
how did high school Mark kill time then without farming or playing sports?
Trombone.
There we go.
I always forget about music.
Yep. Trombone. Love to read, study, watch baseball.
Cool.
Growing up, the first sports memories I have and real recollections of are probably more football or more Cowboys related. But from 12 years old or thereabouts, once I kind of had a better understanding of what all the sports were, and had a little bit more appreciation for the nuance and certain things about it, I was obsessed with baseball from age 12 until, you know, probably sometime in college. I mean,
then that love for sports and studying and learning and whatever got you to choose journalism in college, or how did that?
Yeah, I mean, there was the love for sports, and then the other thing too, and I've mentioned this on like a couple of I've done a couple of podcasts recently that have kind of focused more on like, you know, what got you into broadcasting and that sort of thing.
Right.
So the story that I like to tell people is that, man, I mean, this is real geeky and nerdy, but I have no qualms about sharing it because it's who I am and who I was. And so when I was a kid, you know, my dad would tell me stories about how he had been in radio back in the 50s. And he wasn't doing it then, but it just sounded really cool. And so what I loved when I was 12 and 13 years old was that I could sit in my room at night. And this happens whenever, like I said, you know, you don't have any brothers and sisters to hang out with. And I would listen to WBBM in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know how you can get radio stations from all over the country,
pretty far.
Radio bounces off the atmosphere at night. And so the fact that that this kid in small town Texas could listen to a station in Chicago or a station in Nashville or Denver or Pittsburgh or Minneapolis or New Orleans, Cincinnati, I mean, all that stuff, man, I was fascinated by that. And I just thought, God, man, if I could ever have a job like this where people could hear me all over the country, that would be like the greatest job ever. Wow. And so that was really sort of the beginning of my desire to get into broadcasting.
I think I've heard some other guys on the ticket tell a similar story.
Yeah.
Am I remembering that correctly? Like they heard the stations from all over the country at night and they just became enamored with it.
I think that's a junior.
Yeah. I mean,
that's right. Yep.
Yeah. That is what happened. I mean, I became just enamored with this whole idea of, and if you had told me when I was 14 years old, well, one day you're going to get hired by one of these stations and you're going to be like the guy who does the news at night. So I'm just like imagining like the Mark Folliwell of now, although there's probably not very many kids listening to AM radio now, unfortunately, but I'm imagining that person now, like, you know, how cool it would be. I would have thought then to be broadcasting to somebody like me at that age. And it just, that sounded so cool. And that was my interest in it. That's between that and my dad telling me stories about his background in it. And then I would listen to that. I mean, that just sounded like the neatest thing in the world.
Well, let's move along. We had a little bit of a time crunch here, so I wanted to get.
It's all good. No,
we really wanted to get to like the ticket stuff here, but explain how you first ventured onto the ticket. Were you day one? Or were you actually hired before the station opened?
So you know, I knew Mike Reiner and I knew Grego and Craig Miller and those guys not too well. But when I was at North Texas and it was at KNTU, I would get credentials to come to Ranger games and to do things like what we would call in the sports broadcasting industry, get tape. And so that meant you went to the game, you had your little cassette tape recorder, and you did interviews with the players after the games, and you got sound bites. So they would have sound bites from the players to play in the next day's sportscast and things like that. And so when you hear a ticket ticker now and you hear a soundbite from a local sporting event, whenever we have those again, whenever that's going to be, then those soundbites, you know, a lot of times come from somebody who's gone to the locker room and is there recording and getting sound, and you come back and you cut up the soundbites. And so I would get credentials and I would go to Ranger games on a KNTU, the campus radio station in North Texas. I would go there on those credentials. And so I met those guys, but I mean, I was 20, 21 years old. And I just kind of like, you know, all their conversations that you heard Mike talk about over the years about he and Grego and Junior and everybody would be listening to all of them kind of hold court and talk and joke and cut up and say things about baseball and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I would have been one of those like guys who was just like, dude, these guys are really cool and they're funny and they know a lot and I like listening to them. You know, I struck up a little bit more of a relationship with Mike for whatever reason. He was a little bit more approachable and willing to talk. Grego and Craig were too, but just Mike's probably the guy who I remember more. Ended up doing a little bit of side projects, like just freelance work for something that Mike was involved in. Very, very small little thing. And then the word came out that the ticket was starting. At the time, I was working over at the Texas State News Network, which is affiliated with KRLD. So George and Craig were around doing sports. And I wasn't even really doing very much sports, mainly just news. And the story came out about the ticket starting. It was in Barry Horn's column in the morning news, probably about 2 months, 3 months maybe, before it went on the air. And I was talking to Craig about it. And Craig said one day, Mike Reiner wants you to call him. He's got something he's interested in talking to you about. And when I talked to Mike, Mike was like, well, Mark, I got to tell you, I'm really disappointed you hadn't already reached out to me. And so, you know, I've got this idea for how we want to do our sports updates, and you and David Burrell, the two guys I want, and one's going to work 6 to 1 and the other's going to work 1 to 8. And then we'll switch off every couple of months. So nobody has to work morning drive all the time. And then obviously, you know, the way they've done that has changed a lot over the years, but that's the gist of how I got my foot in the door at the ticket. I met Mike at what we called the Cardinal Commissary back in the day, which was the Good Eats Cafe, which was on Oak Lawn and kind of right there close to where it turns into Preston. There was a Tom Thumb in that shopping center for a while, and there was a restaurant called Zushi Sushi that's in that shopping center. Do you guys know what I'm talking? It's like kind of Oak Lawn and Blackburn, that area.
Jacob's more versed in Dallas than I am.
I'm a Fort Worth guy.
Yeah, we're all.
No,
we're kind of west.
I can't. Yeah. Got to come out here sometime, Mark. I'll take you to a rodeo goat.
Yeah, no joke.
Oh, well, you're going to take me for a burger in Fort Worth. Can we make it Fred's?
Fred's or Dutch's. Yeah.
Yeah. Fred's. Yeah. Fred's burgers in Fort Worth are my favorite burgers.
Absolutely.
I love that place.
Yeah, for sure. Jacob, anything else on the ticket part? You said you wanted to get on some of the...
Well, no. So my question was about... I really am curious about how you and Bob Sturm had talked about doing a show. I was probably fast-forwarding a little bit on the timeline. A
little bit.
But I've heard Bob talk about this. Like, I really want to do a show with Follow Will. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were really dead set on making that happen. And I think the story goes, the management at the time said, no way. It's not going to happen. And you guys were pretty disappointed by that. Yeah. I may be misremembering some of the facts, but I think that's the general idea of how it went.
It's the general idea. I don't necessarily recall management saying no way. I think that they just realized they didn't put it that way because Bruce Gilbert, our boss at the time, was a great guy. And, you know, he just couched it a little bit different way than that.
Okay.
And basically his approach to it was, you know, whenever Rocco was gone, a lot of us all had an opportunity to kind of throw our hat into the ring and tryout, and there was all these ideas about, well, you know, is it going to be one person? Is it going to be two? And who are the two people he's going to put together? Mm-hmm. And so Bob and I just thought, you know, two sports guys, it would be a great idea to do that. And clearly Bruce's vision was, no, we need the really sportsy guy and then somebody else to balance that out. And obviously his vision was way better than the vision that Bob and I had, because clearly putting Bob and Dan together was a genius stroke and produced 20 years of bad radio. And, you know, and those guys are obviously now not together, but still going strong in their respective roles at the Ticket. But that's the gist of it, is that I think that Bob and I both, I think, pretty quickly realized after the fact, I know I did, and I've heard Bob say this too, that we thought how great it would be to sit there and have these like great sports arguments. Mm-hmm. But I think we probably both would be the first to say we've got a little bit of that gotta be rightus when it comes to sports arguments.
Same.
You know, I probably don't have it as much as I used to, you know, mellowed out in my older age. You know? And Bob probably the same way. But I think we realized that after 4 to 6 months of that, I think we would have killed each other just because, you know, of our just like so being dug in on this is the way it needs to be done, or this is my argument about sports, or you should think the way I do. No, think the way I do. And
something about voices too. Like and Bob's voices would be not, it's not similar, but really overbearing. And then you're both sports guys, and that would have been like, you just, you know, I'm not saying
it all worked out the way it should have worked out. And
well, yeah, you have no regrets. Okay, so you got the best job ever, man. Stop.
I mean, it was the best thing in the world for me that it turned out that way. Yeah. And clearly it was the best thing for the station. It was the best thing for Bob and for Dan. I mean, those guys, I love their show. And mm-hmm. and I hate speaking about it in the past tense, but I mean, obviously, you know, those guys are both on their different shows now, but I loved what they did. And it was something at the time that was kind of hard to come to terms with, because obviously I wanted to be doing a 12-3 show, but it was unquestionably the right decision. It worked out the best for everybody involved.
So I hear you describe that show and what it would have been like, and two A-type personalities going at it. Yeah. I hear that and say, hell yeah, sign me up. You know, coming from,
would have listened. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. So maybe for the masses, maybe it doesn't work. But have you and Bob ever talked about maybe now doing a podcast? You know, now that that's a medium that's available.
You know, we really haven't. You know, Bob's got, you know, his stuff he's doing with The Athletic and, you know, with Troy Aikman and all of the different projects that he's involved in. And I like doing a podcast with Brian because, you know, we worked together on the Mavs post-game show. And that's kind of been the first time I've even really ventured myself into the podcast area because, you know, I got a lot of irons in the fire as well. So I love the fact that I get to come on and do a segment with Bob every week. It's really cool that we get to chit chat about it. He was on my podcast with Brian last week. Brian and I had him as a guest to talk about The Last Dance. But, you know, as far as like he and I doing anything like that, you know, I haven't really thought about it. I like the way we get to interact now. And, you know, I think that's good for both of us. It's a good mix of not just enough, but not too much.
I just found the episode. I'm going to listen right after I finish.
Yeah,
the
one.
But that's 77 minutes in heaven is what the podcast is called, right?
Bob was great. We had him on last week, as a matter of fact, Brad. And
I'm looking at it right now. I'm like, what? And then, okay. So I'm ready for that to get going.
Bob is just an offset comment. Bob's really developing into what you're going to see as like one of the great sports personalities, you know, in the country, I think, over time as he progresses. What's your take on the shows now? Not that I would expect you to criticize them, but
I love it.
Really good. Give it to us, Mark.
Yeah, safe space. Mark, nobody listens, so
you can pretty much say whatever you like.
No, I'm a P1 of the station. I have been ever since I left. I always will be. You know, I so admire what they have been able to do for the last 2.5 months. You know, Mike was always famous for saying and joked, and I just, you know, I think the world of Mike and I really miss hearing him, but he was always so famous for saying, we can do what they do, but they can't do what we do.
Nailed it.
He just,
I'm just here for all the Mike Reiner impressions.
Yeah. Hey, look, man, if you worked at the Ticket, everybody's got a free.
Everybody's got.
Well,
one, yeah.
I heard Donnie stumble over that quote about 5 times in a row, and he just finally gave
you
up.
You can't do. we do what they. All right.
Yeah. He's like, forget it.
What they have done under extraordinarily difficult circumstances, where you're going to do a quote unquote sports talk show for 3 and 4 hours a day in a time where for 2.5 months now, we basically haven't had any sports. You know, there's obviously been Cowboy news to discuss and things like that. But you know, by and large part, we haven't had a whole lot of sports to talk about. And especially for it to be new shows that have thrown into the mix with Jake and Dan and with Bob and Corby, and Bob being such a sports guy, for Bob to be able to really, you know, have to adapt what he does and not get a chance to play as much to his strength of sports, because we don't have as much sports to talk about, and to be able to participate in the E! News and Community Quick Hits and, you know, all of the other nonsense that they do and the crazy segments that he, that Corby and Danny and Bob all do together. I've always admired what the guys do. They do what, there's a reason that they're doing what they're doing. There's a reason I'm not doing that. And there's a reason that I'm doing what I'm doing. And, you know, I love the station. I'm always a P1 and just really admire what they've been able to do for the last 2.5 months, because it must be an extraordinary challenge to come to work every day in this time and focus on the things that you need to focus on to produce good radio and find sports to talk about, but find the human interest things and to be able to put away what quite frankly are, you know, can be some things, some distractions and, you know, news out there that's really hard to process and can really bring you down if you get, you know, too mired into it.
Definitely so, a stress test. Just to, it's definitely a stress test to be like, are we interesting? Are we, can we keep it going? So it kind of shows some people's talent and exposes other ones. So, but,
sure.
I'm looking behind you, that clock, and now I'm like freaking out.
No, you're all good.
I kind of want to go a little further back.
We have still over 20 minutes, so we're good.
Yeah, well, you know, plenty of time.
For some people to know, go listen to the Grego podcast.
Do you even tell time on that clock, or is it backwards?
No, I got it. Yeah, I know. It looks probably looks backwards on yours. Yeah. But, you know, I'm looking behind it, and I'm just hearing you talk. I'm like, and just clicking forward. I'm like, oh, shit. All right. because I had that podcast with Grego, and that literally, I looked up, and I'm like, Grego, we've been on for 2 hours. And you go, oh, really? So he can really... Grego's one of those guys.
You're Grego just can fill some time.
Exactly. You're just the same. You've got so much to say, and I'm like, well, you just let Mark go, and he'll go. But I would want to move back a little bit to more or less the heyday of. I mean, you were around when the Ticket was young, and a lot of them were actually, well, you included, were all single and partying and having fun. Yeah. I think we kind of missed that that era. Now everyone's a bunch of grandpas and old men and stuff, so but
kids these days.
Well, you know what I would say about that, Brad, and I don't know if Junior's addressed this on the air in a while, but I remember one night when he was talking about this when we were out and how true it was. So for a while, it didn't happen every Friday, but we had a string of time there where there would be these Friday happy hour or later than that get-togethers at Ozona. Right over there off Greenville and University. So you guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Totally. We've been there all the time. No.
Yeah, Ozona West Tex Bar and Grill. It's still around. Good burgers, good drinks. It's a good spot. And so there was just, we would get together there. And I mean, a bunch of people from the station. And it might be salespeople and it's on-air guys and it's producers. And there really was something, you heard the term bunker mentality. And beyond just that, there was just a chemistry and camaraderie and friendship. And there was something very, very unique there during the first few months, because we just liked to get together and shoot the shit. And some of it was talking about the Ticket and what people are doing on their shows and what sounds good and what doesn't sound good. And some of it was about sports, and some of it was just about being silly. But there was a genuine friendship there. And I don't know what it's like at other radio stations, because outside of the Ticket, that's the only one I've worked at in the last 25 plus years. Places I worked at before were not places where there was a whole lot of outside the work fraternizing. And there was just a lot of hanging out and camaraderie and chemistry together in that time frame. And then, of course, some of those guys don't live together, the Ticket compound and all of the zaniness that came out of that. Mm-hmm. But they're just, I think that's, you know, who knows how history would have turned out differently, but I will always believe in my heart of hearts that part of the ticket success story is that you had people who had a good relationship with each other before it got started, and then the tent got bigger and more people came into it, and the friendships and the bonds and the willingness and ability to have a good time grew from there. And I think that, you know, there just was, you know, there was a group of people that liked each other, and, you know, professional jealousy and competition and those sort of things weren't interfering with it. And so it really is, I think, a major reason why the ticket and those guys came out of the gates and were able to make a pretty quick name for themselves and establish themselves is that I think the listener sensed, I'd like to think that the listener sensed anyway, that these guys were just real dudes. And so when you heard them on the air with one another, that it wasn't like just, you know, artificial friendships or, you know, guys who just talked on the air and that was it. There was real chemistry there, and it wasn't just opinions for the sake of it. You know, that there were guys that had experience with one another and had stories with one another that they could tell, like all of the things that George and Craig like to tell from their North Texas days and all of the wild ass stories they have from that period of their life. I think all of that, you can't fake that kind of stuff. And so I think that's what made the early era of the ticket be a great springboard into what it's become. I think.
Oh yeah. Well, I think it matters in a kind of atmosphere like that, where I think you do have a lot of personalities that are, not to use a wrestling term, but trying to put themselves over instead of the company. Yeah. Or trying to, yeah. Oh, you do know some wrestling terms. Okay. But yeah, I mean, it's that sense of, yeah, man, we got to push together to get this going, and it can't come off as fake. And a lot of those people that did come off as, they're not really fitting in, they left. They couldn't fit in, and they never made it. So that's why,
you know, to follow up on your wrestling term, somebody who a lot of fans don't like, but he certainly seems very willing to help young guys in the company put them over. John Cena, for example.
For sure.
And one thing you can say about Cena in his later years of his time in WWE is he'll work with young guys and try to help put those guys over. And perhaps the fact that they're just wrestling Cena and people gravitate towards hating him, and so maybe that just puts those other guys over automatically. But I do think that's I've never heard anybody use that analogy with it before, but I know obviously the term, and I think that's a great description of it.
I didn't even think about it until you started talking that way, and I'm going, oh, and Jacob's like, I didn't know this was going to turn into the wrestling podcast.
They know Mark was a wrestling guy, but never doubt Mark in sports.
The crosstalks and the George calling in to the hard line and what it, and especially, you know, a long time ago, what it would be like when Dunham and Miller and the song would play and Mike and Greg would go, yelling because the theme played, and those
good
guys
point.
Would be so over the top about it. There really was a whole lot of willingness to put each other over by going on other shows or round tables or just those sorts of things where crosstalk, the interaction with one another. I think that's a great way to describe it, Brad. You have really drilled down into something that is perfectly fits what the early days, and for that matter, still today, but really encapsulates some of the success of the early
days. And I do want to talk about how, like, I do have a newfound respect for John Cena. So I'm glad you brought that up too.
Hey man, the guy's been a hard worker for a long time.
I just watched that Undertaker documentary. For anybody who's not even a wrestling fan, you should watch it. But there's that part where he's wrestling with John Cena, and you knew that John Cena's like, I know you screwed up last year. I'm going to come here and make you look awesome. And that's the kind of thing that John Cena does. And that's after that night, I knew I respected him a lot. So
yeah.
I've always
thought he's been a good worker in the ring. So.
He's the Marine, right? John Cena? Actually a Marine? No, like literally he was a Marine.
I don't know if he was actually a Marine.
He was thinking of
Sergeant Slaughter, man. Come on.
I'm not thinking of Sergeant Slaughter. So. Okay. But he played the Marine in the movie though, right?
Yes, he was in the Marine. All right. But I don't actually think he was a Marine.
Now we got problems.
Yeah. Man. I hope the Mass fans aren't screaming about the wrestling talk, but whatever. So.
Hey, man. Yeah. I embrace wrestling talk, and I'm glad you asked.
At an older age.
Believe me, we could do a podcast about wrestling, and it would be a piece of cake.
Next time.
As long as it's late 90s WCW, I'm in.
Late 90s WCW.
You were a Nitro guy, huh?
Well, I was a Nitro guy.
He had TBS.
Goldberg, and yeah.
He had TBS back in the day.
TNT,
like Jacob
sir.
Was NWO for life, Brad.
Well, yeah. I used to watch the early.
I used to watch
the early '90s Saturday Night, whatever, on TBS. That was what it was on.
Oh, okay. You're right. You're right.
So it was before Nitro. Poser.
Well, I grew up here, obviously, and so the Von Erich era, World Class Championship Wrestling and the Sportatorium and Will Rogers Coliseum in Fort Worth. I mean, those.
Sure.
Man, those years were super important years to me in my childhood watching those guys.
Yeah, my dad tells me about those. I'm sorry to say that, but he
you got to get on YouTube, man. You got to get in the YouTube wormhole, Brad.
Oh, I've already been
it's
on that
deadly.
One. Do you want to hear a Von Erich story? So Grego was on the podcast, and he started routing that he, you know, me and the Von Erichs were on the football field, and somebody was. You know, somebody was directing me that, oh, Grego's a liar. And da, da, da. I go, I don't know. And I talked to Grego. I'm like, yeah, everyone seems to like the podcast. Except one person said they weren't so sure that you knew the Von Erichs. He's like, oh, that's bullshit. I know the Von Erichs. And and so he tweeted the Von, I can't remember which one it is. Keith?
Kevin.
I think the one who
Kevin, who's like in his 60s and lives in Hawaii.
Yeah, he lives in Hawaii. Yeah, and yeah, he nice. Tweeted me and listened to my podcast. Von Erich has listened to my podcast with
wow.
Grego. And yeah, I know. Pretty
well. See, the thing about it is that in the 70s, those guys would have been at Lake Dallas High School.
Yes.
And Grego would have been at Boyd High School.
Yep.
And I can say from my Justin Northwest time that Lake Dallas was in our district at one point. And I don't think Boyd was in our district. I think we were 3A and they were 2A. But okay. I think that we might have played them in non-district games a handful of times.
Well,
so,
it's already been fact-checked, and Grego's already been
Lake
really
Dallas
pissed.
And Lake Dallas and Boyd football crossing paths with one another in the 70s absolutely could have happened.
Yeah,
I think what Grego said was, no, ask him if he didn't come in here to Boyd and hang 60 on us.
Yeah, that's the part. That was the best part.
Now, Grego did, of course, refer to them by their they weren't the they weren't. It wasn't like Kevin Von Erich was rolling in there. It would have been Kevin Atkinson.
Yes, he did say that, but he did bring up that they were the Von Erich. But
yep,
he did bring that up part two. So, I guess we can get. So you got into the part. What do you have? Something about Goldschlager?
Yeah. All right. Okay, Mark. Like this is a hard pivot, but I swear to God, like 10 years ago, like. You told a story about how you drank Goldschlager or something. You said never again. And that's all I remember from the story. But I was dying laughing when you told that story. And I was hoping you could kind of tell it again. It was so funny.
The story is that my roommates and I that lived together, probably right about the time the ticket was starting, I lived with a couple of high school buddies in Bedford. And it was kind of a transitional place for me. And so, as I recall, it was a 2-bedroom apartment and I was sleeping on the fold out couch. That was my room down in the living room. So it was late 93, early 94. And there was a party and just of people in the apartment complex. And some girl that there said that I should have a shot of Goldschlager. And I just, for whatever reason, it was one of those nights where I wasn't feeling it, you know?
Yeah.
And it ended up with me continuing to argue with her about it. And finally, at some point, basically just completely unexpectedly out of the corner of my eye, about 30 to 60 seconds later, a glass comes into my vision and a hand comes in grabbing like this. And did that. And I was not, I just, this was a night I was not feeling it. I just, for whatever reason, I just was not interested. And so all of a sudden, basically it was like, forced upon me, and within about 60 to 90 seconds I was in the bathroom.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was not good. So
have you
and at that point in time in my life, I mean, you know, like anybody, I like to have a good time, and I was in my 23 24 25 year old era. I was famous for what I'm sure you guys have heard the term puke and rally, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we've all
know
been
it
there.
Lived it.
Yeah, of course. And
you
I was
still do.
We'll live it tonight, maybe. Yeah.
I was, I'm not going to lie. I was pretty good about being able to do that. But this is one time that there was no rally. And I would say that it was years before I even got to the point where the smell of it wouldn't almost like make me get sick.
I'm trying to think of mine that's like that.
Oh, I can tell you mine while you think it's
Jaeger. Oh, it's Jaeger. Yeah, mine's Jaeger.
I can't do it.
Well, that's interesting to hear. Mark Followell's Me Too story.
I've had enough friends over the years that like to do Vegas bombs, so the Jägermeister was never really a problem.
I can't even do that.
Yeah, that's the Goldschlager story, and just the level of getting sick from it, and just the unexpected of it, and how it all went down, and just not wanting. Yeah, just.
I remember back when you told the story, I had never heard of Goldschlager, and the disgust at which you said that word that I had never heard before. I don't know. It just tickled me so much. I never forgot about it. So
I was always afraid to. It had gold flakes in it. What happens to that?
Yeah.
And I think people I know then, and they may still do it now, you know, like the common thing to do with that, I guess, is put it in the freezer. Because I think that makes the gold flakes of it separate out a little bit better where you can see it, and it just makes it easier to shoot it because it doesn't freeze, but it gets pretty cold and a little bit more viscous, I guess. I don't know. I wouldn't get sick from it. Not that I'm like doing any shots these days. I could at least sip on it probably. But yeah, for a long time, man, it just, the thought of it was stomach churning. It was not good, bro. Not good.
Speaking of stomach churning, what about the time? What about the time you puked off of a? Was it a parking garage or was it an actual roof?
It was the story that gets told by Gordo and Craig probably about once every 6 to 9 months.
Six to 9 months.
Yeah, I feel like I get that. I feel like somebody reaches out on Twitter and said, "Man, I heard this wild story about you."
I remember hearing it probably like, you know, 12 years long.
How do I not know? I don't know this story, but I know the Goldschlager story. How's that possible?
You know, just back in that time, you know, a lot of the whole like going out together in the early times of the ticket. And so, you know, there was a group of us that were out and we were at the Humperdinck's that was on Greenville. And I believe this was like a puke and rally, one of those kind of instances. And, you know, basically I wanted to hang out for a while longer. And the agreement was that let's go hang out. You know, it was after 2 o'clock. So where can we just go hang out and have fun and basically the night not end? And we knew how to get to the roof of the building where the ticket was. You know, we knew how to get to the elevator off the top floor, then go up the stairwell and push the door open where you could get out on the roof. And yeah, so we got out on the roof and the agreement was that if we were going to go up there, then yeah, you have to do that.
You have to puke.
You have to make yourself get sick up there.
Whoa. So it wasn't even like a sudden occurrence.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Planned.
Yep. Yep. That was the agreement was if we're going to go up there and hang out, then you have to do that.
That's amazing.
And you were first or? Gordo was first. I mean,
no, I mean,
or you were the only one.
I was the one insisting we still hang out together, and then that was what was said. It's like if we're going to go do that, then that's what you have to go do. Yeah. Then that's we'll hang out. We'll acquiesce to your desires to not let the night end. But this is what sort of foolishness we're going to demand out of you if we're going to do that. So. Yeah, hardcore there was a negotiations. Small group of like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 people up there.
I think that was the wildest story because I was, you know, when the time I heard that story, I look at Mark Follow on TV. I'm like, that guy is puking off the top of the roof. Yeah. Are you sure it's not Gordo puking off the top of the roof? It's like, no, it was me.
We had a lot of fun together, man. We had, you know, those were good times and, you know, great memories. And again, you know, to series it up just a little bit, it does get back to what I said earlier is that you just can't fake all of the stuff that goes on in the station. And so that's what makes the station and what, you know, as somebody who is peripherally involved in it, but is involved in it more as a listener than anything, obviously these days, that's just what made it so good then and what sustained it for all these years is just that, you know, all this insanity has gone on behind the scenes And it's all legit and it's not made up. And, you know, all of these things have happened is, you know, because there is a relationship of people who liked one another and had good times with another, and, you know, carried on with each other in a way that you do with your buddies at home. You know, we all have a group of friends in our lives that is our own, for lack of a better term, locker room. And so you have all the locker room shenanigans that go along with it. The, you know, the winding each other up and the, you know, knowing how to push the other person's buttons when you want to. And, you know, the literally and figuratively version of snapping towels and giving each other hot butts and, you know, all that sort of
stuff. Without getting the news involved, so, but yeah.
So Brad, we have 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Thereabouts. Yeah.
You want to do some rapid fire questions?
Sure. Well, I was going to ask about, like, what's, you know, right now in the quarantine, what are you doing right now?
Well, so let's see, Reader's Digest version of that would be that, you know, we recently did a lot of those shows, where the Fox Sports Southwest replayed the wins from the 2011 playoff series. And so we did a playoff rewind show after each one of the series. So that took some element of work to put that together, doing Zoom calls and interviews with those guys. There are, you know, obviously doing podcast interviews, still doing my thing on The Ticket every week. There are a few Maverick oriented projects that I'm involved with that still necessitate not a great deal of work, but a little bit of work from time to time. And then, you know, I've spent some time around the house. One thing personally that I've mentioned to a few people, and I think some people know this, you know, I a few years ago wanted to improve my Spanish speaking. And so I started taking some junior college classes online to help with that. And after four semesters of that, you know, it improved it, especially reading and writing. Speaking and understanding is still obviously a lot harder. But after four semesters of it, 2 years of it, it's like, well, man, I want to do more of this. So I started going back to North Texas and took a class there. And then that inspired me to think, you know what? I should go back and finish up the degree that I didn't finish because I was too busy trying to start working in radio in 1992. So, So I've been, I have sitting right here. Let's see. So this is for my, I don't know how well you're going to be able to see this. This is for my earth science class that I'm in at Brookhaven.
Oh, you're like straight up working.
Yeah, can you see like my little rocks in there? That this is how I have to do labs at home because it's all like an online class. So
right,
like that's cool. Yeah, here's my piece of obsidian, an igneous rock that I had to identify for.
They're minerals, Marie. Yeah.
Here's my here's a metamorphic rock named Gneiss, Gneiss. You know, so. So, let's see. Oh, here's a piece of anthracite coal. Right here.
Did you think we'd get on to wrestling and him showing us his rocks?
Mark. Yeah, so this is my, that's
Mark
my earth science
turned into
lab class
Hank in right Schrader now. In recovery while in quarantine.
I don't think Mark's seen that show, but he just saw it on Wikipedia. So
yeah, that's me, you know. If I haven't seen a show, I'll just read about it on Wikipedia.
Exactly.
That's funny.
But no, so to answer your question.
Are you still exercising or anything? Or?
Of course, man. Yeah.
Yeah. You're an avid runner.
Yeah. Stuff. Yep. I'm doing that every day. I did some sprints on the treadmill, and I heard a segment with Bob and Jake talking about Kyler Murray, and then they did entertainment news right after that. Dan came on, and then I got done with my time, my interval training on the treadmill, and got in here and got ready to jump on the podcast with you fellas.
Wow. Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, but I'm running in some form or fashion, either around the neighborhood or at the Katy Trail or doing treadmill sprints. I do that 6 days a week, man.
I was going to ask if can you run with a mask on?
No.
That'd be pretty hard.
No mask running, yeah.
Could you get one of those, what are those workout masks?
Yeah,
like control those, your
those elevation masks.
I don't really care. I'm just asking.
Oh, if you like elevation masks to help you, like run with the mask on, so it helps you get prepared.
You look like a villain.
Yeah, for being at a high altitude.
Yes, you're very bad.
Bane.
So whenever I did the trip to Peru last year, my wife and I went to Peru, and a bunch of some friends I went with, and we went hiking on the Inca Trail. And you spend several days basically at 10 plus thousand feet. Yeah. So we did chlorophyll supplements before we left. That's we didn't go around and like train with a mask on, but we did do chlorophyll supplements to be able to help your red blood cells carry more oxygen.
Chlorophyll?
It worked, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, I saw those.
You went to Peru. I almost said Purdue.
Peru would be a lot more fun. I saw those on your Instagram.
Yeah, with all due respect to West Lafayette.
Sorry,
yeah.
Sorry, Purdue.
More fun than Purdue.
It's really doggone.
Yeah, I'm Instagram guy now, newly acquainted with Instagram, so I made sure to give you a follow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Follow.
Yeah, the trip to Peru was a year ago at this time, so I just got done posting a bunch of, like, remembrance pictures from that.
Looked very cool.
Do something to pass the time, you know. So I'm like, look, I'm like everybody. You know, I'm extremely fortunate in terms of how the Mavs have, you know, taken care of and treated their employees during this. You know, I've had a little bit of work to do, but not very much. But, you know, it's a great organization. And Mark and everybody that's been involved, you know, they've been fantastic about, you know, we do Zoom calls to check in and updates and this sort of thing and that sort of thing. And, you know, like I said, there's a handful of work projects, but I'm like everybody. I mean, I'm just trying to get through this, this unique time in our lives as best I can. And some days are more difficult than others, but you know, I'm very, very fortunate and that my family's healthy, my wife's family's healthy, we are, and you know, we're getting through it.
Do the Mavs play this season?
Yes.
Oh, hold on. Cool. Are they gonna make the playoffs, right?
Yes.
By the current formats that are being thrown out there, yeah. As long as they don't have to play a bunch of regular season games and drop out of what they're in the seventh seed. But I think they have a pretty healthy lead on the eight, so it's
I mean, they would have to play a lot of regular season games, and they would have to like completely fall apart, and another couple of teams get really hot. And number one, I don't think they're going to play enough regular season games for that to mathematically even happen.
Yeah,
right. Some of the ideas that are out there are that, you know, there might be a play-in tournament, but they wouldn't be one of the teams that would maybe be subject to the play-in tournament. So they'll be back at some point. You know, it seems like everybody's saying late July Well, you know, I think that, look, we're going to find out more. There's a board of governors call on Friday. And I think on June 1, which is next Monday, then there's going to be some announcements about kind of getting players back in, and the players that are coming in from out of the country will have to do like a 14-day self-isolation period. And then, you know, practices can kind of start to pick up a little bit more than what's happening right now, because what they're letting, and the Mavs just announced today, they're going to open up their facility tomorrow. But what they're letting teams do right now is so limited. I mean, it is like next to nothing that they're allowing them to
do. One guy in the gym at a time or something.
Yeah, four people and no coaches. I mean, they're taking obviously an abundance of caution with the whole thing, but what they can do is extremely, extremely limited. So we're clearly, I think, a few weeks still away from full-on type practices happening, and given the way the layoff has been and the amount of time, it's going to take several weeks of practice to be ready. So I don't see that there's really any way to get it started before about the 10th or 15th of July, but that doesn't even sound like that's the target date. It sounds like the target date is probably a week after that.
I mean, it isn't baseball or, I mean, even hockey, I guess, but I mean, you're full contact, or you're really got to take some caution on it, so... I get it.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, you know, it sounds like baseball, they got a lot of things to work out. Well,
they have more of a labor issue than anything. Yeah. It's just frustrating. I'm like, come on, I want something going on here.
It's hard.
You got golf, bro.
I got golf.
It's Tiger and Phil.
I didn't even watch it.
It's really weird because there are still people who are going to be making several million dollars, but it's also hard to ask people to take like 80% pay cuts.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I know that sounds weird when you're still going to make, when you're Mike Trout and you're going to make 30, but now they wanted you to go all the way down to like 6.5 or whatever, you know, I thought one of the guys on ESPN said it best last night, that this is a Rorschach test. And some people will say they're going to see people making $6 million or thereabouts to play a game. And then there's going to be other people who are going to see it as you're asking them to take an 80% pay cut. And
that's me. I'm on the second part of that.
Yeah,
Mike Trout's not paying your mortgage, sports fan.
Yeah, I mean, a 50-ish percent pay cut, since they're going to play 50-ish percent of the season, seems to be the right number. Mm-hmm. An 80% one.
It's, you know, the pay cut on top of that that I have a problem with.
Yeah.
I mean, I know revenues aren't going to be the same because you're not going to be getting gate receipts, obviously, because most of, if not all, the season clearly is going to be played without any fans. So I understand that that's difficult, but I don't know, man. It's for smarter people than me to figure out. But to answer your question, Brad, yes, the Mavs will be playing in the playoffs in Orlando, presumably around the beginning or beginning around the late part of July.
It's going to be like the McDonald's tournament. They're all going to be in the same spot. Just kind of.
Yeah. As far as I know, that seems to be the way that seems to be what everybody's talking about.
It'd be kind of funny, like watching LeBron watch Luka or something like that, or other players.
Yeah.
I think that'd be kind of cool.
I would assume, though, that for each individual game, I mean, I do like your idea, and maybe they'll let that happen where they would let like players from other teams come in and watch as quote unquote fans and do some things to enhance the atmosphere because their presence there, they'll be like, you know, shit talking from the side.
Some Michael Jordan style shit talking.
Some crazy.
Get a layup, dumbass.
Oh, I mean, they're just, yeah. We can mic every. Yeah, yeah. There's so many possibilities with everything.
You could have some fun with that, but then the flip side of the coin is that's, you know, within that little controlled environment, that's more people that you're introducing to it, and it's, you know,
we'll get a pump sprayer next to LeBron and with full of sanitizer. Well,
they also have their Instagram image to protect too.
Yeah,
they're not going to want to cut loose.
Get an enormous oscillating fan that's just right there, like one of those big box fans that you know, have in your garage, and just turn it on full blast, and that way. You know, it disperses everything. I don't know.
Just, we've got ideas. Nobody on the next podcast.
Just pipe in Michael Jordan sound bites.
Hey, man. Yeah. That works for me.
All right, Mark.
Well, I just got the look.
Okay.
So I know that my wife's got a Zoom call that she's got to do here.
Sorry, Miss Follow.
3 or 4 minutes. So.
But all right.
That was awesome.
Thank you, Mark, so much. Appreciate it.
Well, it was nice to talk to you guys. I enjoyed it. And, you know, you guys are welcome to reach out. And there's probably clearly a lot more ground that we could cover at some point in time.
Just a full-on wrestling podcast. That's all we did.
Yeah. Don't be a stranger, and we'll do it again sometime.
Thanks,
you guys
Mark.
Are doing a nice job, and I look forward to another chit-chat sometime. Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
Enjoyed
it.
All right, you got it, guys. Take care.